Welcome to Local Matter Sports. This is your host, Sam Brooks, and Michael Bowen is back in the house again. I can't believe it. Man, it's three times in a row.
I'm excited. I was. I couldn't miss this one.
I'll tell you what. Yeah, it's a good one to be here on, isn't it, Michael? Part two. We talked with Gerald Brown, Coach Gerald Brown, last week in part one. Had so much stuff that we wanted to cover, we asked him to stay for a part two, and he obliged us there. So welcome back to the show, Coach Brown.
Thank you, Sam. Michael, glad to be here.
Coach Gerald Brown from, golly, Memphis State, Sweetwater High School, Tennessee, TTU, Memphis, Indiana, and the Atlanta Falcons fame. Mm-hmm. Last time I'm going to say that again. So he coached at all of them, played at some of them. So last show, Gerald, we were getting into you coming down to UT. You guys definitely started to explore the passing game a little bit when you got here. What was your first take when you walked on campus? You got to meet your players and all of that.
At
Tech.
At Tennessee Tech.
I mean, there's a big difference, Gerald, yes. Up in Neyland and then coming to Tennessee Tech. Don't mean nothing. I mean, I played there and I love yes. Tennessee Tech, but there's a big difference.
Yes. I guess just probably just the resources. You know, at Tennessee, you know, we had a little bit of everything from – travel to food to facilities to, you know, whatever. It was just different. And, you know, coming to Tennessee Tech, again, I think that was it. Just, you know, just the resources that were available. I remember the weight room at Tennessee Tech was over our offices.
Right.
And when you guys were up there working out and you were power cleaning and dropping the weights, my office was shaking. And it was those type of things that I think was the big difference.
So you're mentioning you guys lightly, right?
Yes.
Because I wasn't a big workout person.
Well, I wasn't going to say that on air. But
everybody who's listening is thinking that.
I could jump rope pretty good, I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you come into I think we had a team that was fairly good the year before and had some decent talent. What did you feel like your first job with Tennessee Tech would be as far as getting your receivers ready to go?
You know, again, I had to rely on where I came from. So I knew the drills I wanted to do. I felt real good about how we was going to teach them. And, you know, there's always a learning curve for the players. I was fortunate enough to get here in the spring, so we was able to do a lot of that in the spring. And then from there, I think it was just the little things, being detailed, in and out of the huddle, getting lined up, again, practicing hard. And this went all the way through my career. If you are a good practice player, you will be a good game time player. Because at every level, Sam, Michael, there's a lot of people that don't want to put in that effort.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold that as selling points. And tape don't lie. So I would point it out on tape. This guy.
Yes, you would.
Don't want to run.
Honest guy, right? Honest guy don't lie.
But you could find people on your opponents that would just show who they were. And my selling point was, okay, we need to get after him. And, you know, it just, I know it's, it seemed like tough love sometime, and that's exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, that was how Coach Majors taught. Yeah. And if you hang in there, you'll have success. And that's what I try to make it as fun as I can, but also be as detailed and as not bossy, but coachy as I can.
Yeah, it was bossy. just I can tell the story now. Part one last week, I wasn't able to tell it, but I remember the day that we met you. We were in the weight room, and Coach Ragland brought you in. And we always used to go to the old gym. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're talking about Anthony Avery, the basketball players, all of them. We would all play basketball just about every night except the weekend. So we get done with practice, and I walk into the old gym. And about the time I walk in, I turn around the corner, and somebody's out there, and they threw a ball up from half court, and it bounced at the foul line. And he caught it back here and did a Tommy Hawk dunk. And I was like, daggum, I wonder if that guy's got the court right now. And so we went on and played, and I don't want to give it away, but went on and played, went and worked out the next day, and Ragland brought the team together. And in the door walks Daryl Brown. That was the guy that Tommy always slammed it the night before. So you talk about instant respect from the receiver. I mean, we were like, my gosh. And all of us were there. You know, you're talking about Jeff Glass, Mark Wattenbarger, you know, all those guys. So
you couldn't do that, Sam?
No. I could get up there now, Michael, but not that high. But, yeah, and, you know, a little bit about Rag, you know, while you're here, Coach Ragland, so much respect for him, you know, passed away several years ago. I got a chance to actually go eat with him a couple of weeks. I didn't even know, you know, anything was going on. Mm-hmm. He took me out to eat lunch, you know, and we had a great lunch, and then a couple of weeks, you know, he's gone. But myself, you know, without that guy, and it was Gary Darnell that recruited mm-hmm. me first, and then Gary Darnell ended up leaving, and Ragland took the job, you know, he wanted to sign me and brought me in. And, you know, I tell everybody all the time, Gerald, I don't know what I would be doing right now.
Right.
I mean, I thought I had a pretty good idea that maybe I wanted to coach because mm-hmm. of the coaches I had, but didn't know how I was going to do it. And, you know, our family didn't have, you know, a lot of money, mm-hmm. so I didn't know if I was going to get to go to college. And then mm-hmm. that happened, and, it, you know, it just kind of gave me the opportunity
right.
that I got and led to everything I have today. So that's Jim Ragland.
Right.
So what's your memories of Coach Rag?
You know, just, you know, he made me laugh all the time. He was a funny guy to me. And, you know, I saw him as a player's coach. I thought he did a lot of things for the program outside of football. I know he mentioned golf tournaments, fishing tournaments, because you mentioned what was the difference in UT and Tennessee Tech resources and Jim Ragland's ideal of gaining those type of resources and needs where, you know, let's have a golf tournament, let's have a fishing tournament, things that were big time in this area and for Tennessee Tech, and it just always worked out great outcomes as far as, you know, number of people that showed up, and he was a good coach. You know, he gave me an opportunity. You know, that was my first opportunity, and you know, for anybody that I ever worked for, I felt like I needed to be good at what I did because they gave me the opportunity.
So how much, as you came on to Tennessee Tech, how much of that Tennessee offense were you able to kind of install into the offensive system as far as schemes and routes and that sort of thing?
Well, our offense coordinator when I got here was Coach Helton. And he was kind of, you know, he was a little bit of option.
Well, you're going to sugarcoat it, so let me help you answer that question. LT was a great offensive coordinator, and he knew defenses, man, and he knew checks.
Yeah.
But the quick game with LT did not exist.
Yeah.
So I know for a fact, because I talked to him about it, that you brought the quick game.
Yeah.
You brought the spread,
mm-hmm.
you know, the one back, whether it was under quarterback or shotgun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you brought that with you.
Yeah. So, you know, and that was it. And, you know, I think that – you know, Coach Helton felt comfortable doing what he was doing. And as an assistant, you give ideas without just, you know, just going off the rails.
Yeah.
And this really works for what you're doing. We can put this in, do this. And he was very good with it. Matter of fact, I live right across from you. I lived right across from LT, too, in some of my years at Tennessee Tech. You know, and he became very fond of Caitlin.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. We lived, we were neighbors.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talked about what you brought, you know, kind of the offense, the spread, the quick game. How much of that really kind of changed what Tennessee Tech was able to do on the field offensively, do you feel?
I think that early on, it was incorporated bits and pieces, not so much, boom,
mm-hmm.
wholesale change. And as we progressed, new coaches come in, whatever. I think it started to grow from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I can tell you from start, you know, we tried to run the run and shoot the first 2 years I was there. And, you know, I liked that offense. It was hit it and go, you know, and I guess it pretty much was a good mixture of run and pass, but no mismatch information.
Right.
It's just how they lined up, you know, and called the play.
Yeah.
And then you guys got there, and it was more about mismatches. It was about the quick game, you know, taking advantage of if they're playing 7 yards or deeper, we're throwing a 5-yard stop, you know, and that that kind of led to some games where, you know, when we got in my senior year, where you'd been in the program a little bit, there were games we threw the ball 40 times. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you Tennessee Tech has not thrown the ball 40 times in a long time. So that influence and that success for an older coach like LT, you know, really broadened his horizon, yes, too, as far as what you can do with mm-hmm. the football.
Well, and there were, you know, that was not widespread across college football at that time.
Not at all.
And that's kind of the point I'm trying mm-hmm. to make is, you know, at this time, this was – kind of revolutionary.
I think the only folks that time, you know, TSU had a team at that yes. time that would really throw it around right. because I'd, you know, I'd look every week at who led in receiving mm-hmm. and all of that. And, you know, I'm getting 5, 6, 7 balls, you know, maybe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're getting 13, 14, yeah. you yeah. know, but that, I mean, they throw it just yeah. about every down.
Yeah.
You know, they throw it to run it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now it seems like everybody's kind of doing more of that now in the spread offense.
Yes. You know, and again, that's where the game has evolved. You know, before, like, you know, when I first started at Atlanta Falcons, you know, we was a tight end, fullback, Mike Turner at tailback, and we was coming downhill. And now, you know, the fullback and even the tailback, you know, people are drafting tailbacks now round 4 and 5, and they're making Pro Bowls, but they're not spending a whole lot of time looking for tailbacks in college unless you're a great one, a great, great one.
So I want to continue that thought. We're going to have to, you know, get our sponsors to pay for stuff. So we're going to take a quick break, folks, and we'll be right back with Gerald Brown.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Welcome back to Local Matters Sports. Your host, Sam Brooks, again with Michael Bowen, a special guest today. The legend that he is, Gerald Brown, is in the house. And Gerald, when we went to break, we were talking a little bit about pro ball, the spread and how it's changed. And I remember coming down, I think it was on a Friday, to Atlanta. You guys were fixing to go in the hotel. So you would bring everybody in, even a home game. You would bring everybody in, and I think it was a Saturday morning, and I came down, and Gerald would let me kind of hang out at the hotel and see all these guys. Got so many stories from that. And but the thing I remember is after the players were gone to bed, you had dinner and meetings and all that. One night they were gone to bed, you coaches stayed around. And I think it was Mike Tice was your offensive line coach at that time, and he said something that stuck out to me, and I thought about it as the years have gone on and the spread has grown. Mike Tice said he could hardly find a guy in college that knew what it was to put his hand on the ground. Yeah. Tell us, what did he mean by that, Gerald?
The game has changed so much that almost everybody, high school, college, is running the spread zone read offense. And most of the time, the offensive linemen are in gun stances.
Right.
They don't have their hand in the ground. And another thing is the quarterbacks – are hardly ever under the center, taking snaps directly from the center. And the tailback is always in the gun. So when we look at those guys and bring them in, whether it's free agency or draft, and we evaluating and writing reports on them, they have never put their hand in the ground, ever. So when they come to the NFL, first time they put their hand in the dirt, and you're talking about we're going to be a downhill come after you offense, and that guy has never put his hand in the ground. So you got to teach. You got to teach the quarterback to take snaps from center. You got to teach the lineman to be able to put their hand on the ground and come off the football. You got to teach that running back, okay, we're now 7 yards deep, and it's downhill instead of the, you know, lateral moves that you make, and it is different. It is different for those guys, and it takes a while luckily in the pro ball, you got an off season where you got OTAs, you got mini camp, and then you got training camp. So you get X number of practices, but it's different now.
So another thing that stuck out, and you'll love this, same conversation, Mike Smith, and you touched on it. Mike Smith said, you know, quarterbacks today, they're not 6'4", 6'5", drop back passers. And that's what, in the NFL, that's what it is. Even now with spread, the base and the moneymaker is that eye and running the football. You know, all of them do the same thing. It's just who does it best. And Mike was saying, you know, you can't find quarterbacks like you used to find them. You know, at that time, and that's right when the spread was really getting popular, it really struck me as odd that that's where, you know, what you guys were worried about. And the thing he said about quarterbacks, too, was the difference between a good football team in the NFL and a great football team in the NFL is the quarterback. He meant, you know, Peyton Manning. You know, he threw out two or three right there, and I started thinking about that, and that's the truth. You know, you can't get by with a mediocre guy that's running, you know, snapping the ball.
Right, and that is true. When you play in the NFL, it is the guy under the center. And if you look at who's the top quarterbacks in the NFL, in my opinion, you know, Buffalo has one. Cincinnati has one. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. You know, those are pretty much drop back, under center type quarterbacks. And yes, those running quarterbacks are good, but if you hit one, it's not pretty. We played Washington when I was at Atlanta, and I forget the quarterback's name. I think he was a Heisman Trophy winner from Baylor. And Weatherspoon, our linebacker, hit him on our sideline, and I don't think he ever was the same again after that hit. And that's, you know, Lamar Jackson's great, and Deshaun Watson was great, and hopefully he'll continue to do that, and Murray is great. But once the defenses figure those guys out, it's a game changer.
Well, the big difference from one level to another, from high school to college and from college to pro, and yes. I wouldn't know about pro, yeah. But it's the speed of the game, and I cannot imagine, you know, what it's like to get hit week in and week out by those guys.
You ought to be on the sideline. I was fortunate enough to be on the sideline during the games, and some of those collisions, I'm like, oh, my goodness. And, you know, Mike Turner was a big running back, you know, and he carried us for years and years. And, you know, some of the hits he took and gave, oh, I'm like, oh, my goodness. And it's week after week after week. And that's why I think that when we practice and, you know, Smitty was really great at this, about protecting the players. You know, we'd have a 10-period practice, and two or three of those periods, we take our helmets off. Because Smitty's philosophy was, we're going to go into the game healthy. And in the NFL, we had to learn how to practice full speed without going on the ground. Smitty would lose his if a lot of people were on the ground. But we wanted to practice fast and at the game speed so that when we did get in the game, we were ready that way.
And, you know, you were talking about the difference in levels of speed. These guys have the speed with the size, and that's one of the crazy things. I know there's a, you know, I keep seeing the highlights for the upcoming draft this week, you know, with this kid out of Georgia that's 340 running a 4.8, you know, better time than Mahomes in the combine. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yes, And they're all over the place. And I was an offensive coach, and I will say this. Those guys on the other side, that guy you just mentioned is a defensive tackle, right? Mm-hmm. Those guys on the other side, it's different. Mm-hmm. Those guys are different. And, you know, you just talked about, Sam, these linemen coming out of college got to learn how to put their hand in the ground. Well, that's what those defensive linemen been doing all their life. So it's – you know, they're learning, and these guys are like, okay, you ain't gonna learn on me. And it's for me, it was different.
Make sure we tie everything together. You've been talking about Coach Smith, one of your three biggest influential coaches in your life. Got with him at Tech, right?
Yes.
And you know, for those that don't know Coach Smith, I mean, he was doing some really revolutionary stuff on the defensive side of the ball at Tech. Top five, I think, ranked defense at Tech. Utilizing technology as well, yes. Ahead of everyone else, as I recall. Yes. Can you talk a little bit about him?
Smitty's an amazing, amazing man, I absolutely loved working with him here. And when Smitty left, we stayed in contact. And, you know, you talk about relationships. And Smitty, you knew he was on the right track to become coordinator, head coach material. And he would always say, gee, if I ever get a job, I'm going to hire you. And this is a true story. I can't make this up. I was at Indiana University, and we were going to a coaches convention in California, and we had a layover in Dallas. So we're sitting there, and Pittsburgh is about to play Jacksonville in a playoff game, and Smitty's the defense coordinator at Jacksonville. So we're sitting there, and my phone rings, Smitty. And I'm like, Smitty's about to play. Why are you calling me? So I go out in the lobby there, and I was, Smitty, ain't y'all about to play? He said, yeah. He said, but I got a question I want to ask you, but I think I know the answer to it. I said, what's that? He said, I'm interviewing for the Atlanta Falcons tomorrow. If I get the job, you come. I said, well, you didn't have to ask me that, Smitty. I'll be there. And, you know, fortunately, he got the job, and I was able to go with him, and it was a great 7 years in my career.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But first, we're going to have to take a break. We're with Gerald Brown. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Local Matters Sports. Your host again, Sam Brooks with Michael Bowen. We got Gerald Brown in the hot seat today and talked about a lot of stuff. We left for break and talking about, you know, Gerald down in Atlanta. And you were talking about off air the story about, you know, how Mike called you, Mike Smith called you and hired you down there. Go back over that story for them. So that I'd like for them to hear that.
Well, you know, after the initial call that he was interviewing and if I would come with him, you know, through a couple more interviews, he ended up getting a job. So, you know, he called me and laid out, you know, when I needed to report, you know, all the details of my contract and, you know, where we would be staying until we found somewhere to live, et cetera, et cetera. And then toward the end of the phone call, he said, you're my receiver coach, right? I had been the receiver coach until I went to the XFL, and I started coaching running backs in the XFL. And then when I went to Indiana, I was the running back coach. So I told Smitty, I said, Smitty, I will coach whatever you want me to coach. I said, I've been coaching running backs for the last 7 years. And I said, I absolutely love it. It broadens my thinking from, you know, from blocking schemes to protections to defenses and everything. And I said, I'll coach what you want me to, but I really love coaching running backs. And he says, okay, you're my running back coach. So the rest is history. But, you know, that little story there just goes to tell you what kind of person Mike Smith is.
Yeah, and like you said, that doesn't really happen a whole lot.
That does not happen
a whole lot. So you mentioned the Maniacs. So when you left Tennessee Tech, you took about 6 months off, mm-hmm. you know, to think about what you wanted to do. In that meantime, the XFL got started up, and the first person Memphis called, and Kippy being a player and you being a player at Memphis, they called Kippy Brown, your brother, and offered him a job for the Memphis Maniacs. So, of course, he called you and said, hey, Gerald, pack up and get ready to come to Memphis.
Yes, I got another story. It's storytelling time. So, you know, when I left Tech, I went to Knoxville. I had one job that I just didn't feel good in, and I started selling exercise equipment. And I would travel around to high schools, hotels, hospitals, wherever to sell. And a lot of the high school coaches were either Tennessee or Tennessee Tech former players. And every time I go into one of the schools, I ask, what do I need to do to get in high school coaching? And all of them would ask, do you have your teaching degree? No. I go to Alcoa, and Scott Meadows, a Tennessee Tech grad, is there, and I give him the same rundown. Scott, what do I need to do to get into high school coaching? He said, you want to coach high school? I said, yes. He said, can you come back tomorrow? I said, yeah, I'll figure it out. And when I went back the next day, he had his principal and AD there, and they had set up something for me to do where I could get certified and become a teacher. And in the meantime, I was going to help Scott Meadows coach. So I helped Scott Meadows coach at Alcoa while I was selling the exercise equipment. And that year, Scott won the state.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about the XFL. I had to leave after game 7. But I always tell Scott, I said, well, I got you through the toughest part of the schedule because we had to beat Maryville and Austin East and Sweetwater. So we always have fun with that. But, you know, when I went to the XFL, and this is crazy, but I bought a house around Memorial Day. And like you said, XFL offered Kippy a job, and he called and he said, hey, they offered me a job. He said, I can't take it. He said, the NFL is about to start. If I leave right now, I don't know if I'll be able to get back in the league. So he said, we'll just wait and see what happens. So he didn't accept the job. Mm-hmm. And then I had bought a house, and about October, September, he called back, and he said, they're going to wait on me, but I need my coaches in Memphis for the draft. So I had bought a house in May, and in October I had to put it up for sale.
Wow.
And that's when I went to the XFL.
And talk a little bit about how the XFL – help prepare you a little bit for professional football, you know, coaching professionals.
That was my first time, so it was a position change for me.
Right.
So I was coaching running backs, and I had some good running backs. I had, you know.
Rashawn Salaam,
mm-hmm. Heisman Trophy winner from Colorado. I had Jay Graham from Tennessee. Mm-hmm. We were loaded now. But, again, the difference was at that time, and things changed, accountability was big with players. And I had some good running backs, but if they messed up, it might be a receiver or somebody else that wanted to hold him accountable. By the time I got to him, I had to be Mr. Nice Guy to bring him back up. And, wow. You know, I don't know that, you know, it was like that in Atlanta. But at that time, those, 1999, 98, those were different guys in that room then.
And those were guys trying to really prove themselves, and some of them get back into the NFL, get their first shot in the NFL too. So that, you know, that probably played a big part in it as well.
That's exactly right. And it's just like these leagues that are going on now, the USFL and the XFL coming back. You know, we had guys that, you know, some of them were out of college, but we had Jordan out of Miami. We had Alvin Harper, played with the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas Cowboys. Rashawn Salaam, first-round pick for Chicago. Shante Carver, first-round pick for Dallas. Druckenmiller was our quarterback. So we had people that had been there for whatever reason. They were not in the NFL again. And like you said, they were working to try to get back in. So.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I thought the product – the XFL put out there was really good, and then all of a sudden, you know, it ended, and that was a big adjustment for you. But through some of your connections, and you've said it several times, it's about connections and relationships with people. You got your next opportunity, and it was Jerry DiNardo took the job at Indiana University and gave you a call, and the next thing you know, you're there.
Yes, because Jerry coached in XFL too. He coached the Birmingham team, and a matter of fact, that was our first game of that season. And when Jerry got the job, there was an opening, and you know, of course, Kippy was XFL head coach. I think him and Jerry might have met somewhere on a vacation somewhere and talked about, you know, Jerry talked about his opportunities in Indiana. Kippy threw my name out there. I head coach Majors called Jerry, and I was fortunate enough to get that job at Indiana.
Got to visit you up there. You guys did a phenomenal job at pretty much what I consider, and everybody else probably does too, a basketball school. You created some excitement in the fan base and had a couple of really good seasons up there. And then that led to the opportunity with Coach Smith where you got back in NFL. But how was it in Bloomington? How did you enjoy coaching at Indiana?
First of all, you know, it's before the spread became the spread. And – you know, in the Big Ten, we had Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Iowa, Wisconsin, and those in the Big Ten at that time, those were power teams. And we tried to play that. I thought I had a good fullback in John Pinoza. I had some good tailbacks, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. He ended up transferring, but he played for New England and Cincinnati for many years. So we had some good players at different positions. In the long run, we just didn't match up with the Michigans, Wisconsins, and we could give them good games, but you know, it just didn't work out that way. Now, when we went to a running quarterback our last two years, then we kind of leveled the playing field, because now they big guys load the box, and all of a sudden now we spread them out, and we got a quarterback that can run and throw, and it was just a game changer. And, you know, I was there for 6 years with three different head coaches, Jerry DiNardo, Terry Heppner, and Bill Lynch. And Bill Lynch, he made me assistant head coach. And I was running back coach, assistant head coach, co-special teams coordinator. And Terry Heppner, he passed away. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he wanted to do was we wore wristbands that said play 13. And everybody, what does that mean? Well, we got a 12-game season. Indiana has not been to a bowl game in a while. And if we go, we play 13. And that was our deal for the year. And our last game, we had to beat Purdue, and we got it done. And so that season in itself was a success because, you know, that's what Terry wanted it to be.
Running out of time here in this last segment, but that takes us to the transition to the NFL. We've already talked about Atlanta and your time spent down there with Mike Smith, but the difference between coaching college kids and coaching NFL players. You've talked to me about that before. Share that thought process as a coach.
Well, you know, when you look at the difference in pro and the other places that I've been, high school, college, in pro, it's all football. It's all football. If your players, you know, have a hiccup off the field, they don't go to the weight room, they miss a treatment, Smitty used to always say, that ain't your job. Your job is to coach him. And that was the big difference. Smitty was big at, this is your room, you handle your room. And I tried to be as transparent as I could, Sam, Michael, with who I am and what I wanted to be. And again, you know, you got to pick your battles. I'm not fighting earrings in the ears, shirt tails out, pants up above the knees. I'm not fighting that battle.
Because they're getting paid.
They are getting paid, and there's a fine system. If they don't meet the standards, then you hit them in the pocket, and that's where it hurt.
Yeah.
But like I said, there's some things that I wasn't going to change. I didn't care if I was high school, college, or pro. Yeah. You're going to show up on my meeting on time. You're going to get your notepad out, and you're going to take notes, because that's going to help you to learn what we're doing. When we go on the practice field, you are going to practice. It is a run and hit business, and we're going to run. And if you do that, and I'd say trust me, and you know trust don't come easy. You got to earn it. But I would throw it back on them. I want you to trust me. Just watch me do what I do. But I need to trust you too. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you got to go out there and make plays at the end of the day.
So, been pretty cool to walk with you through your career and learn about the differences. And, you know, this has definitely been a football show, so we appreciate that. We're going to have you back sometime. You're in Knoxville now, close enough to us, so we'll have you back. It's been a blast. I do want to say, and I've said it to you before, but I want to thank you for all that you've done for us, my family, and everything you've done. You've been a huge influence in my life. You probably don't know how much, and I really do appreciate your friendship and everything you meant to our family.
Well, coaching, you build a lot of relationships, and you know, some of them come and some of them go. And I know with your family, I've always felt like family around your family. Good. Your mom, your brothers, your sisters, your wife, your kids. Of course, Will's my godson. Yeah. Love me some Hallie. But, you know, that, to me, that's what it's all about. And, you know, like I said, I know sometimes it was tough love, but it was love.
It was love.
It was love.
We appreciate you being here. Thanks for taking the time out of your day, and we'll do it again.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Coach.